Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salary Report. We have a treat for you today. I'm sitting on a lovely afternoon on a boulevard looking out over a church in Basel, Switzerland. It's beautiful. It's always beautiful in Switzerland with Thomas Meyer, who has joined us on the Salary Report once before. He is the publisher of Perseus Publishing in here in Switzerland and does wonderful work on Steiner and many related topics, and he's a great fighter for freedom and truth. And Thomas, it's always a pleasure to be with you, but it's really a pleasure to see your offices and be here with you and your publishing company.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me for another talk with you. I'm very delighted. We have an open conversation again, I hope. And, well, where should I start? Presenting Perseus? What is Perseus
yes.
doing?
Yes, tell us about your company.
Founded about 28 years ago. And as said by Catherine, Steiner is core, but we have also books on, for example, the American contribution to the Holocaust. We published first a German translation of Anthony Sutton's book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, which was quite studied outside anthroposophical circles because it's of a general importance. Uh-huh. And Guido Preparata's book on conjuring up Hitler, mm-hmm. which is also important, I think, and interesting. So we have spiritual, we have actual, we have historical subjects, and you find a lot of Holocaust-related subject, Jewish question subject, 9/11, and if you want to go into details, look up our webpage, which is www.perseus.ch, which is Switzerland. And there you find even an English section. It's not very big, but it is there.
And I'm a subscriber to your magazine.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about the magazine.
Well, the magazine is an English version of the German 20 years ago. We founded a German magazine called Der Europäer, the European, trying to outline what would be desirable as a line of development in Europe, because the present European structure is economic or Catholic. It is not really European.
Right.
And that was from the beginning, after I've written a book on the Polzer Hoditz, who was the brother of the cabinet secretary of the last Austrian emperor. I had the desire to make a journal what is actually European in the good sense, not in the American sense and not in the Catholic sense. And so we created the journal Der Europäer, which goes now into its 21st volume, I think. And a couple of years ago, with the help of my wife, Oshaya Gyrfi, we started to bring out an English edition, which is not just the same. It has some variations, and we call it The Present Age, a monthly international magazine for the advancement of spiritual science, covering general subjects, political things, actualities. In this issue, for example, there is an article on Parsifal, because I was invited to go to Sofia and gave a lecture on Parsifal, the opera of Richard Wagner, which is key for the understanding of what is evil and how can it be transformed. So that is just an example of what we treat in the present age, with good contributions by people of, I think, great capacities, like Terry Boardman regularly writes, Andreas Bracher, who lives in Boston. So we have
it's a very rich collection, and I love picking up a magazine and reading about spiritual matters that come right down and hit the power lines of the material world.
Yes, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think one of the key things, which I hope we will have for more contributions in the future, is what is the new money? I mean, you are a money person,
yeah.
You're much more than me. But I have understood one thing by Steiner, that of course money cannot grow like people think eternally. There must be a rational way of making it vanish, of recreating it in a transparent way so that not trillions vanish and nobody knows where they go.
Right.
So his money ideas would deserve a special treatment also in the present age, and I hope we will do that in the future.
Maybe
you can help us there.
Oh, that would be great.
Right.
Okay, so we're here today to talk about what Steiner says about what we should do now. So one of the challenges that everyone listening to this has is they're looking at what's going on in the world and they bring it back to me. What can I do? What can I do to shift things? What can I do to change things? And I've been talking in the Solari Report a lot about how we enforce the Constitution and deal with the money and the trillions missing. The question, of course, always comes back to how. How do we get power? How do we get leverage? So tell us what Steiner, let's start with what Steiner says about the present age.
Well, one thing he says, we are in an age where we have a big task, and this is understanding evil. What is it? Why is it in the world? Why did the higher powers admit it? What can we learn from it? It's something that is treated already in a poetic way in Middle Europe by Goethe in his great known poem Faust. But Steiner brings it to a level of scientific access to the question. And, you know, he concretely talks about various figures like Lucifer, like Ahriman, who are outbalanced by the Christ. The Christ is the central figure, spiritual. But Lucifer and Ahriman are admitted. Why are they admitted? The higher powers could also have done without them.
Right.
They had reasons. So the understanding of evil is a key question. And I could see that, for example, when you write about or make research about 9/11 or Holocaust, it's so terrible that most people get afraid or get hateful and want to kill the people who are responsible, like the American crew of Cheney Bush. They should all be killed and so on. That doesn't help. So what helps is to understand what is the mechanics of the spiritual mechanics of evil.
Right.
And that needs a clear mind, that needs the belief that you can understand, and that needs a willingness to widen the spiritual horizon. That is work. So in Steiner we find the tools to understand phenomena which people admit they exist. I hear that all over again. Somebody says, oh, these people are power-ridden, they are possessed. Okay.
They are possessed.
Yes, but then take it concretely.
Yeah.
What beings are there who possess a human mind or a soul? And there Steiner gives a wonderful help, a great panorama of Ahrimanic, Luciferic elementals, beings that if we start to know this, we stop making the mistake of taking evil to a level where we think there is an evil person, and we take a look at the level of the personality. It doesn't help. We have to look through it by the question, what are the powers that are guiding, inspiring these people? Take a fellow in America like Alan Dulles, who is a very dark fellow, I think.
Right.
But he had no idea of possession in a spiritual sense, I think. But others could. And then we get to a deeper understanding of what is the mechanics of evil. For example, a basic question for me in Steiner was, we have to understand that evil is not eternal. That sounds a bit trivial maybe, but it means that there is an eternal plane in the universe. And evil is a creation out of a higher plane. It is not absolute, like God. Even in Faust, this is clear. You know, if you have the beginning of the prologue of Faust, you see that Mephisto comes up to the Lord, complains that he is bored with humanity. he really does. And then the Lord.
So much happens for entertainment these days.
And then the Lord says, do you know Faust? And then Mephisto says, the doctor? Of course he knows him. And actually, God gives him, the Lord gives him the task, try your evil arts with him. I trust him. You can do whatever you want. There you go.
It's like the story of Job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So evil gets green light from a higher plane. Evil belongs into time and into space where we live, but it doesn't belong into eternity.
Right.
There is an eternal good, but there is not an eternal evil. This is a thought. If you take that concretely, also by meditation, you get less emotional when you have evil phenomenon, like what you hear daily, torture, torturing of children, all these atrocities. It's hard to stay. Everyone is touched, but we shouldn't lose ourselves in the emotions against evil. Fear and hate of evil are components of evil itself.
Right, they give evil energy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but to rise above it, we need some concrete spiritual knowledge, technical knowledge. Everyone thinks to make an iPhone or a car needs concrete details in knowledge, of course. But to understand the spiritual, that's not necessary, which is an illusion. We need concrete spiritual.
When I was dealing with the litigation and very serious physical harassment, I studied at a church, studied spiritual warfare,
mm-hmm.
and they taught us that evil was a spirit coming through someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a human is attacking me in a way that's evil, my job is to bring them to the light and separate them mm-hmm. from the spirit of evil.
Very, very good.
And it was very interesting. You know, we used to always pray for the people who were doing evil to us,
mm-hmm.
and it worked. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting is when you got to the end of the litigation, on the last day of the last trial, everyone came down, all the different attorneys and government bureaucrats working on it, and you could literally hear a hissing in the room.
Hmm.
It was very, I would say Luciferian, but it could have been Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
And I could literally hear them thinking, why can't we get you? Why can't we get you?
Yeah.
And what I realized was there was no connection between me and them,
mm-hmm.
because there was no anger or hatred that could create that connection.
Mm-hmm. So that is only possible if you recognize concrete, invisible entities as a part
right.
of our total reality.
Right.
That's transcending materialism, yes?
Right.
And that's not going into a pantheistic spirituality, but a concrete one.
Right.
There are as many spiritual beings as we have plants and animals. And
right.
So,
but they're invisible.
You don't
see them. You know, yeah. They're not blue or green
exactly,
or whatever.
Exactly.
But they're very real.
They are very real and they are very invisible. So that's the key subject. And I think the first, our time, according to Steiner's world vision, so to speak, lasts about 2,100 years. That's the fifth epoch. That's the Anglo-American, European, Germanic epoch. The Germans and the Anglo-Americans should cooperate, but the Anglo-American power elite has tried to get rid of the German corporation. But the
right.
German is necessary for understanding, especially these deep questions of spirituality, what Steiner has done. He did in the German cultural field, and that is no accident. But the Anglo-American power elite wants to do without it. And that's a spiritual struggle for power. And so I think the task today would be...
So the Anglo-American Alliance is committed to a very material vision of the world.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, if you listen to their philosophy, you know, if you listen to the Mason philosophy or
yeah.
the Jesuit philosophy, it's very committed, it sounds, philosophically to the spiritual world.
Yes and no. There is also a kind of a spiritual materialism, a combination. You know, these people sometimes are not blunt materialists, but they have a spirituality which is full of material interests and material connections. They even want to work with dead people after their deaths in rituals. You can use a dead person who was in a club after his death in order to be present and just merely not to make you more intelligent or more moral, but to give you a certain power. Right. And that's done.
So they have occult practices.
They have occult practices. And on the other hand, you have, of course, maybe it's important to make that statement briefly. You have great Americans like Emerson or Thoreau or Alcott, what was his name? I forgot. Who have a great spiritual vision at the same time, being mm-hmm. Americans. But they are as far as from the American general public today, right. as Goethe is from the German public today, or right. Steiner is.
Right.
But they are there. And I think it's important that we know true American individualism, for example, is also there. And I can see it in the some of the whistleblowers and the people who put their finger on the true facts about, say, 9/11, Pearl Harbor, or whatever, you name it.
Well, one of the reasons the population has been, I think there's several reasons why the general population has not objected to what's going on. And one is, I think it's very hard for them to fathom evil. Fathom evil.
Yeah. You know, and there is even a fight. There are some occultists in lodges or some Jesuits who know. As Steiner, they back Steiner, they say, he is right. It is the time of confrontation with evil. If we want power over people, and these people want power, we have to prevent them to go to the understanding of evil through picking up something like spiritual science. If they pick that up, they have the tool to understand it. Then they get independent. Do we want their independence? No,
right.
we don't.
No.
So that's a background why spiritual science, as it has happened, is slandered. Some people say, oh, there are racist or anti-Semitic tendencies, which is only an attempt to disqualify it. And then you say, another attempt is to superimpose people like the Dalai Lama.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it's much easier to read the Dalai Lama than Steiner.
Right.
You don't have to use a lot of your thinking capacity. There is a phenomenon of a kind, I call it wellness spirituality.
Right.
Yes, and that attracts people because it doesn't make such an effort necessary. So that's...
Right, pour in hot water and stir.
Yeah, exactly. So that's our attempt in also with... Perseus, by the way, we've just been in Greece with a family. Perseus is one of the great heroes of Greece, and he is a fighter for the evil, I think, still for our days, because he doesn't confront it emotionally, he doesn't confront it directly, but if you read the mythology of Perseus, you see he is given a shield which is mirroring what he sees in the shield. And indirectly, he looks at his enemy, which is the Medusa, which is a kind of a huge demonic being.
Right.
If you confront her directly, you get stone. If you confront her by your power of thought, intellect in the good sense, indirectly, by reflection, then you can beat her. And that's what he does. He fights her, but he doesn't look at her directly. And that is something which I think symbolizes the modern way of confronting evil.
Right.
Trust in your intellect. Many people lost it. They believe only in specialists. They don't think they can find something out as a truth. The whole truth question is at stake today.
Right.
Fake news. Is there any truth? No, everything is fake news, no?
Right. Fake news, fake science.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So if I wanted to read what Steiner said about evil, what is evil, and confronting evil, what would you recommend?
Well, his book on world evolution, Occult Science,
mm-hmm.
there you find where does Lucifer, where does Ahriman, where does Christ come into evolution? That's maybe the largest picture. But then there are, of course, also single lectures you can find. I think there's a lot translated about Lucifer, Ahriman, Christ,
right.
the mystery of Golgotha, the fifth gospel.
You know, that's my favorite one, the mystery of Golgotha.
Have you studied the fifth gospel yet?
I've read it. Okay. I haven't studied it, but I've read it.
It's great.
Yeah.
So you find, once you start looking for it, you will find a thread leading you on, I think. One has only to develop the love for spiritual activity, you know?
Yeah.
And that's today something which is watered down into passivity all the time by the media and all that. So that's the task.
There's still churches that teach, that yes. teach real...
Yeah, they are. But do they help? They are not concrete?
Oh, they're very concrete.
Are they?
Yeah, the problem is white people won't go there.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, it was the African Americans in America who mm-hmm. had to use spiritual tools to survive
yeah.
genocide.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah. They have very concrete knowledge. It's very useful. It's very practical.
Mm-hmm.
Saved my life.
Yeah. Also, we have the Orthodox in the East who was really helping during the kind of the Bolshevism not to get even worse. But I think today, as we are in a scientific mentality, we need a science of the spirit. We can't only live from the belief force, even if it is good for a while. There are people who can't believe anymore. They can't. What do you do with them? You can't tell. You have to believe.
No, you can't.
But if you can show them spiritual facts, they will have a new access to it. And I think that's the long-run necessity, even in Russia.
So, and also, I think if they see it working for other people... Yeah. They'll start to say, how come you're okay?
yeah.
And I'm not.
As we are talking about evil, we could also now, if you're ready, otherwise you interrupt me, please, go on a little bit to the evil in politics, cheap politics, power politics.
Yes.
The Russian socialist experiment, it's very clear, it's easy to show, it was conceived in the West. Trotsky and Lenin were just instruments for an intention which was not Russian.
Right.
You know, we have written about...
In fact, it went back to financing from the same people who killed Kennedy.
Exactly. And we found lately a witness that Kerensky was the man between the last Tsar and Lenin. He had a possibility exactly 100 years ago. In summer 1917, he had a general and he gave him the order, fight Lenin and his group coming... to Petersburg. And he started. And after a while, Kerensky canceled this order. And when he was asked in America by Sherbatov, an old Russian private, why did you do that? He first was silent and then he said, it was an order of the Lord. That is a key statement.
Right.
Because it was known that Kerensky is a member of a Russian lodge. They had ties to the Grand Orient de France.
Right.
And the experiment was in the interest of those people who knew the Russian have a future mission. So if we want to control not only the present, but the future, we have to do things now in Russia under our guidance. And so if Kerensky tells his generals, stop the Bolsheviks, that goes again the long project.
Right.
And he was torn. He was half Russian. He also said, I have betrayed Russia. That is one half of his heart. The other half was a loyal member of the lodges. And when he died in America in 1972, he had a double funeral. Orthodox, Russian, and Masonic.
You know, we've seen two world wars basically designed to make sure this was the Anglo-American century and not the German century.
Exactly.
And in those two wars, Russia suffered mightily.
Right.
And then we saw the wall come down in 89.
Yeah.
And again, Russia suffer mightily. Many millions of people dies.
Right.
You know, life expectancy fall very harsh.
And in 89, there was a chance. There was even, we had a commemorial meeting in Berlin, 100 years threefold by Steiner, started in Berlin, 17. And there was a man present who wrote a book in 1989, in April, about why the German, the socialist, what is it called, DDR, East Germany, is at the end, it will collapse.
Right.
And in the end of the book, he says, we have to go back to the ideas of Rudolf Steiner's threefold state. This was published in April, before the fall of the wall. And I think it is clear that there were people who had planned the time after the breaking down of the wall, economically. And there were some German people, and one was a banker, he was even knowing about anthroposophy. Herrhausen, the president of the German bank, he was killed. He was killed.
I didn't know that.
In a very brutal way. I can't tell you the date. It was in 1989, in the beginning, I believe, or in the end, rather in the end. And there was an American, Fletcher Prouty, who said, the Europeans should look at this death of Herrhausen as a kind of a warning.
Right.
The planners of the post-1989 time didn't want to have interference, like
right.
Kerensky and his general.
Right.
They didn't like the interference of the general.
Right.
So the Europeans shouldn't complain that the bad Anglo-American power elite is doing what they do. They should understand the mechanics of evil in these quarters.
Right.
And show the facts. As Steiner says in one of these key diary things that I have passed on, I think, to you, he says there are only two possibilities for the Europeans. Either one must unmask the lie with which the West is obliged to operate if it is to have success. One says, the leaders of the Anglo-American cause are the bearers of a stream that has its roots in impulses which arose before the French Revolution, aristocratic monarchic power, and make use of the impulses of the revolution, but only as empty phrases, democracy, freedom, brotherhood,
right.
In order to actually hide behind these phrases, behind which they conceal their real motives. Either we unmask the lie of not truly democratic individualistic aims, but they use this as phrases, the NATO, the UN is full of it, or we, if one doesn't do it, one surrenders world control to an occult group within the Anglo-American world until sometime in the future emanating from the subjugated German and Slavic territories through torrents of blood, the true spiritual goal of the earth will be saved.
When, what year did he write that?
1918.
Wow.
After the war.
Yeah.
And I think that's our time.
Yeah.
The contrast to this is what George Friedman said, that the main purpose of the American establishment foreign policy was since 100 years to prevent that Germany and Russia come together.
Right.
So that is what has to happen, either through free cognition or through torrents of blood. And I don't know what is going to happen. I'm not a prophet, but if you see how the NATO, which is an aggression alliance, has nothing to do with peace, is now lining up on the western border of Russia all the time, provoking. I don't think the Russians will for a first time tolerate what they tolerated in the two wars.
Right.
They would be able to strike back.
The one of the things I asked you, if you'd seen Putin's Christmas speech, and you said no.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm going to make sure I send you a link to it. But there's an excerpt that I have up on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about it is one of the things he talked about was the cultural values of the group running the West, including their practice of pedophilia.
Oh.
And he uses the word pedophilia. Yeah. And I think it's because he's trying to define them as being of channeling evil and practicing evil and tying their occult practices. So he's trying to very much call them out for what they are.
Very courageous. Where did he give this speech?
Right before Christmas. I'll send you a link.
Yes,
but
please.
He makes it clear that that Russia is interested in preserving their majority culture, not tearing it down.
Yeah.
And that there's certain kinds of practices which are unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, that brings us to Putin. Maybe we could mention an extraordinary thing which we have been covering a bit in the present age, that Putin and Oliver Stone had a number of a series of conversations during 2 years, which is extraordinary, because I don't think Putin has given such a series of interviews to anyone else. And of course he must have known and his crew that Stone is an interesting individual, a whistleblower of his own, like with his Kennedy movie or the Snowden movie. So you find quite interesting things in this interview series.
I don't know if you saw, Stone did a history of the, I think it was a history of the 20th century, but he goes through the war in detail and shows a lot about Leningrad and the terrible losses that the Russian people took during World War II.
Stone did that?
Yes.
Okay. That made him seem certainly more acceptable and interesting for Putin. But I must say, if you look at this, Putin's demonized picture in the Western press is not substantiated by any single statement he makes. On the contrary, he stays like on a higher level, knowing all this, and repeatedly says, for example, it's such a danger, the atomic danger. They wanted to have an agreement with the Americans. The Americans canceled the ABM, or what it was called, the contract. And built these huge things in against Iran, they said, but it's actually threatening Russia. And he thinks it is necessary that we think at least 40 to 50 years into the future and think for the humanity, because if there is an atomic confrontation,
everyone loses.
Everyone is concerned. And you can see a picture of Putin, which can help to correct the demonized picture we get in the Western press, especially also in American, of course. So I think it's quite moving.
Now, these interviews are about 4 hours long.
4 hours.
So Stone must have taped an enormous amount of material.
No question.
Yeah.
And you can see there is a open, almost friendly relationship, and Putin is sympathetic of him, and at the end he says, you will suffer for this interview. So he knows that Stone also has quite courage to do this. So it is a chance for everyone who wants to have a little bit of a deeper understanding of the man Putin. You see him also doing judo, is that the right thing?
Yeah.
And you can really see in an admiring way, this man has not only the will, I don't know, he's probably not a saint, where are the saints today anyway, but he does want to control himself, first of all, and not the world.
He's an intelligence officer
who
has remarkable understanding of international law and knows how to use, he knows how to use intelligence. There's a certain kind of intelligence analyst or intelligence agent who knows how to use knowledge and information in very strategic ways, and he has that ability.
So I wonder, I was wondering, of course, does Stone know about 9/11?
I'm sure he does.
Putin?
I'm sure Putin knows very well.
That is the big bomb in the future. If that is coming out in a way that cannot be obliterated too easily, that will have an effect, the whole justification, a building for the American power politics will have no basis from one second to the other. It's all crumbled. That's why it is so defended, this lie building. That's why we are also trying to make, you asked me the question before, is 9/11 still relevant? In other words, you did that. And I think, yes, it is, because if one does not understand, we don't have to know all the details, we cannot right. easily, but we can know easily that what was told us is just lie, mythology in an anachronistic way. It's not modern mythologies, it's mythologies, it's lies. Everyone can find out that it cannot be true what we right. were given.
Well, I'm a great believer that the Trump campaign and presidency has had a lot to do with cracking the facade of fake news. I mean, Donald Trump yeah. has declared yeah. war on the yeah. corporate media.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And he's cracked the code on vaccines, on Common Core, on 9. You know, he went after Jeb Bush on 9/11. And yeah, it was quite
I've
remarkable.
I've seen an interview where he says only bombs could have done that, not planes.
Right.
So what is he doing now? Was he starting in a line that would have maybe cost his life if he would have gone on with that? And he doesn't want to do that?
Oh, but what was interesting is when the campaign started, the world assumed, if you look at the money that poured into Jeb Bush's campaign from the Republican side, they assumed that they could do it again. They assumed that they could, you know, despite everything that George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush had done, that they could do it again. Uh-huh. And the pushback was unbelievable.
Okay.
And I think Trump's courage in doing that reflected the fury of the American people.
Okay.
You know, okay. I just think that. And now remember, here's the interesting thing, because if you look at a history of false flags, this was a false flag done in New York City and Washington, D.C., which have more people who understand the financial system than anywhere.
Yeah.
And I think you have way too many people knowing that the event was traded and huge profits.
Yeah.
I think you have a lot of people who know, you know, sort of how they made money
mm-hmm.
on it, and you have a lot of people who understand the, you know, what was going on in Washington and what affected. So they see it as a highly profitable operation. They mm-hmm. see how the money worked on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also a key event for the understanding of evil, because evil, on an intellectual, on moral way, is connected to lies. And if lies can be used for politics, if it is possible that people believe lies, there is a negative strengthening of the lie principle in the world.
Right.
And that is a reality. It's just not just theoretical. And so, well, for me, the key experience was when I heard the comparisons with Pearl Harbor and 9/11, I knew exactly, immediately, they built the explanations of 9/11 on an accepted, unfortunately widely accepted, historical lie about Pearl Harbor. That's an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
That's dark gray or black magic achievement. And there is only as this whistleblower Ketchum has said, I think so ably, the 9/11 has caused such a wound in the American folk soul. There is only one cure. And he said, as in a very strong physical wound, you need sometimes salt to burn out the infections of the wound. We need the salt of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think, as long as there are people who help to clarify the lies, there is hope. If we would say, that's past and we have more important thing, that's no good.
The one thing I'm concerned about, I just finished reading a book by the Inspector General for the Bailout Programs. It was called TARP. And one of the things you realize when you're reading it is he doesn't give up on the system, because you have a couple of congressmen and senator who are still trying to do the right thing.
Right.
But some of them are the same people who have been playing that game for 20 years. And what you realize is, no, their presence just affirms the credibility of the system, which allows the system to keep on stealing.
yeah, 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 yeah.
So I think the trap we don't want to fall into is a few truth tellers keep the system credible enough to keep on keeping on in a way which is truly evil.
This is evil. Well, but all the more it is very positive that we have somebody like Stone having the courage to do this, to expose himself, and Putin having the courage to do this as well. And I hope this will give some long perspectives. I have only one criticism, and I made it in Putin's vision or in his demand that we should think at least 50 years ahead. I think that's much too short. We should learn to think for millennia ahead.
Yeah, I agree.
That's why we need greater spiritual perspectives.
Yeah.
Imagine you find in Steiner there will be the time in about 4,000 or 5,000 years where the moon will come back. By the way, that's a good time to check whether we will find an American flag somewhere when the moon comes down or not. So we need even longer perspectives to survive.
Yeah, I agree. Now, one of the reasons I think 9/11 is so important is what we saw with 9/11 was a beginning of a process to really build out a global empire by the United States.
Yes.
One of my favorite cartoons is, it says, of course Russia's evil. Look how close they've moved their country to all of our military bases.
That's great. That's wonderful. Yes.
And you can see we just have them, you know, totally ringed. Yes. Anyway, so...
And what is the figure the Americans spend for the military? 600 billion, if I'm not mistaken, and the Russians, 60.
And guess what the undocumentable adjustments at the Department of Defense in the last year of financial statements was? 6.5 trillion.
Okay.
So I think it's much more.
Okay.
I think it's much more.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons to understand 9/11 is to also understand the people, you know, there's an old saying, to the victor go the spoils. Mm-hmm. But if you look at who is politically ascendant today, mm-hmm. it's the neocons mm-hmm. who were politically ascendant as a result of 9/11.
Well, they were already in that paper, the PNAC, you know, Project for a New American Century.
Right.
They were saying, that was, I think, in 1999.
We need a new Pearl Harbor.
We need a new Pearl Harbor, and they had it.
Right.
And, you know, even Rumsfeld went around, I think in January 2001, giving people a book about Pearl Harbor, which is a bad book because it is the book about the so-called surprise attack.
Right.
So they were psychologically preparing that, including a Hollywood movie on Pearl Harbor, which came out in June, I believe.
Right.
So it was a really well-prepared psycho... treatment of the population.
Now, I would point out, in 1996, the Islamic population globally surpassed the Catholic population.
Oh, yes.
And so, and you had Islam growing faster in the United States than mm-hmm. Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you literally had a situation where Islam was clearly ascending, certainly in demographics and in financial power.
Mm-hmm.
What does Steiner tell us about Islam?
Well, one thing he says, striking for me always when I see it, that there was a very dark, intellectual, sharp initiative about in the 7th century, 666, the Academy of Gondi Shapur. When the Romans demanded that the philosophies, the schools in Athens were closing, then a lot of these people went to Persia, Iran, and they founded the Academy of Gondi Shapur. This was a flourishing place for great intellectual knowledge, medical, natural science, but according to Steiner, it would have accelerated the spiritual evolution of mankind to such a degree that the higher development would have been cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And Gondishapur was under a highly Arimanic being called Sorat. And then he says, and good spirits put Mohammed on the horse of Islam. That, in a way, damped it all down.
Right.
So Islam had the good that it made an evil attack on human development ineffective to a certain degree. So he speaks about Islam in a way that, of course, it has a good aspect, but it is not for the future. It's not. It keeps people under, not a very progressive state of thinking and feeling. I think this, being an admirer of Sufism, and there is good Islamic-inspired literature. I forgot the name now. Great, great poets in the 11th, 12th century. But these were individuals who had a wider range at their heart than just dogmatic Islamic belief.
Right. So, but
there is no Trinity understanding in Islam, right. For example.
Right. So explain what Steiner says about Russia and the coming age of Russia.
Well, interesting that you ask. 33 years ago, there was the death of Anastasia. And there are good signs showing she was dying in America in 84 with another name. She was the surviving daughter of the slaughtered family of the last Tsar. I think it's an authentic, important story. It's like Kaspar Hauser in a different way. And she had, in a way, the destiny of the Romanovs.
Uh-huh.
The Romanovs, if you go back to Peter the Great, brought into the Slavic area of the Russian territory an un-Russian tendency to become a power nation. This is not Slavic. This is not the Russian soul. But Russia was, in a way, deformed from its original seed-like capacities. And the socialist experiment is just a peak in a long century development, which started, you could say, with Peter the Great, who was amazing, who became, in a way, an instrument for the West to influence Russia in a way that the West was pleased with it. And the real true future in Russia has to do with the Slavic capacities. And they are not warlike. They are peaceful. They are of a different setup. So if you have a Russian today, we always have to ask how much Slavic Russian is in him and how much has he been westernized.
Right.
You can ask the question with Putin, with others. Solzhenitsyn was certainly an example of someone who had a heart for the deeper Russian soul. And
now Putin's from St. Petersburg, which is very Western.
I know.
Yeah.
He has both.
Yeah.
And he has an understanding of the West, but I don't think he is totally westernized. That's interesting about him. I think he has a deeper side. And Steiner says, we have the Anglo-American, German time, the fifth epoch. And in the year 3400 or something like that, we will have the start of the Slavic cultural epoch.
So we know Brzezinski, who just died, was pushing never let the Germans and the Russians form an alliance.
Exactly.
And what we see now is the neocons basically forcing an alliance between the
I hope it will come, because at least at some reactions in Germany were positive in the negatives, in the sense that they say these sanctions are just impossible, we cannot accept them. If that would lead, and even Brussels, even what is its name, Juncker, said impossible, we will never accept it. I'm not sure if they would keep this line. That would be a good start for a new alliance between Middle Europe and Russia. But I don't know what they go.
So I believe that one of the debates in the American election last year, the presidential election, was between a group of people in the deep state who wanted to gather into North America and preserve North America. And the other group wanted to continue to liquidate North America to preserve a global empire.
Yeah.
And so we saw the first group win, but immediately the neocons started to work mm-hmm. on Trump very heavily. Mm-hmm. And if anything, you know, they're slowly chipping away, and you're seeing them be ascended, get more and more power. And of course, we had Congress pass the sanctions over Trump's yeah. objections.
Yeah.
So I think one interpretation is what they want is they want to so ring military capacity and missiles around both China and Russia that they can deliver a first strike without retribution.
Yeah.
And so continue to maintain a global empire.
In the interview with Stone, Putin makes clear that this is probably an illusionary calculation, that the Russians are able to, the first strike theory he disbelieves. And
right.
He said, careful with that. That's not possible. And he doesn't say he does want to strike back, but the possibility is there. And maybe if America is hit by something for the first time, America knows what it means to have war in the old country. Not only say it is, like Pearl Harbor and 9/11.
Right, so not a false flag, but a real hit.
Maybe, yeah.
Right.
At least it's, I think, a very dangerous situation. The NATO is America ruling in Europe militarily.
Well, we see the general staff of the Russians saying they believe the Americans are preparing a first strike.
Yeah. And why do we have the NATO, by the way? Why do we have it? Yeah, it's a very dangerous situation. There are people who say there are prophecies in Middle Europe. In Munich, around Munich, there was a simple man who said, Third World War, it will be very quick. Russians come against Europe. They have all reasons. If the Europeans don't shake hands with the Russians now, then in the next confrontations, Europe will suffer, they say. And there will be a financial crisis in a couple of years. There will be civil wars in Europe. There will be immigration problems we have already now.
Mm-hmm.
And Europe will be so chaotized, and we have all these false flag, according to this man, who is quite, I think, remarkable. Hijacking America's mind on 9/11, he says all these attacks, Madrid, London, they were false flags.
Right.
They were there in order to...
We are clearly seeing an acceleration of false flags.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
And the calculation behind that is that the population is shaken with insecurity, grabs for false securities, is more easy to lead into exceptional laws and this and that. So what is being prepared now is something that can only, if there is not a great waking up process, we will have a next catastrophe.
So what do we do? Come back to, what does Steiner tell us? First, we have to understand how evil the people, you know, leading this effort, the drumbeats of war, how whether it's false flags or contemplating a World War III, we have to understand the evil that's present. So that's one thing we can do. Two, we can develop spiritual tools to understand it, because you have to shift this.
Yeah.
The consciousness has to shift. And part of that consciousness, you know how I said the present age, because it connects the spiritual to what's happening in the material and tries to build integration. I think, you know, what I see with many people is they refuse to connect their spiritual lives with the day-to-day mm-hmm. flow of their time and money in a way that mm-hmm. could bring real change.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing is maybe a good aspect of the confrontation with evil can be that we have a much more concrete appreciation of truth and of the higher good, which gives more strength also for practical daily tasks, that we cannot be shaken so easily by outward events.
Right.
When I have an author I told you about who has memories of the Holocaust and connects this with Anne Frank. And once I told her, what would you do if you had the money and the time? What would you be to your mission, your job? And she said, I would go to the places of big crisis. It was Yugoslavia at that time, and they would tell people in despair, there is something in all of us which cannot be destroyed. This is my experience, she said. And it's also my experience. And I think that is something which then makes possible to bridge the spiritual with the material, because we are freer with the material. We are not slaves and are not anguished if the money has gone, you know?
Right. It's very interesting. One of the things I discovered when I was dealing with great danger in the litigation was that the difference between different groups of us was I believed my soul was immortal, and there were certain things I wouldn't do to compromise my mortal soul, because to me that was just, you know, that's a very big deal. You don't destroy eternity for a quick fix.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And what I realized was not everybody understands that our souls are immortal.
No.
And I'll never forget, I had a
Buddhist. There are souls who are immortal, or what, amoral.
No, immortal. In other words, they think that when they die, that's it.
That's it.
That's it.
But we have lost the spirit. That's another basic thing of Anthroposophy of Steiner, to restore the recognition there is spirit, soul, and body.
Right.
Eternity, time, and space.
I had a Buddhist explain to me during the litigation that she was trained to believe that your how you conducted your life in this life could change the karma of your family seven generations forward and seven generations back. And I remember saying to her, wow, now that's incentive.
That's what?
Incentive.
Yeah.
That's leverage.
Okay. Yeah, that's leverage. Yeah. In that sense, the confrontation with evil is a confrontation with a spice of our evolution. We need evil as spice. What do you do in the field, agricultural? They use the dung, you know, the excrements.
Right.
That's a spice and a leverage for evolution.
Right. So, do you remember the Jung story I told you?
Which one? I just have
to tell you this one. Jung had the psychoanalyst. Jung had a patient who came to see him, who was from the upper reaches, aristocratic part of society, and she came in to see him. She's beautifully dressed, and she said, "You know, I'm not going to give you my name because I'm only coming once." And here was her story. She told Jung that as a young woman, she'd gone to medical school, become a doctor, and then had fallen in love with her best friend's husband. And she couldn't get over the situation. So to reconcile the tension, she murdered her best friend. Being a doctor, she knew how to do it, and she got away with it. And so then she shortly thereafter married the husband, got pregnant. The husband, right after she got pregnant, died. She was a very accomplished horsewoman. Suddenly her horses were bucking and rearing. She had to stop riding. She had beautiful wolfhounds. They all died. And as soon as her daughter was old enough to run away, she ran off and hated her mother the whole time. And she told Jung, she said, wherever she, because she'd been completely isolated from society, she told Jung wherever she was, the birds would stop singing. She said the birds knew.
She said that.
Yeah. So she came to Jung on the theory that if she confessed, she could clear the energy and somehow be forgiven and go back to being part of society.
I think that's totally in tune with the higher intentions. There is a fairy tale by Grimm which goes in the same direction. That a little girl does something which she is not allowed to do, go into a chamber, a holy chamber, and then when Mary comes back from holiday, so to speak, she asks, what have you done? Have you been there? And she says, no. But she knows it's not true. And she repeats that as long. And at the end, child dies, husband goes away, and she is then coming to the stake to be burnt. And at the last minute, she says, I confess the truth. And then they marry, the spiritual world, so to speak, comes and says, okay, it's late, but it's okay. Now you can develop. Same story.
Same story. Yeah. So I think this is America's problem.
Yes.
So you said before, you know, we have to get to the truth. And I think this is why the truth is so important.
Because the sword of truth, huh?
Yeah. I think...
It hurts.
I don't know. I never found the truth terrible.
Not to you, but to many people.
Yeah, I find it very cleansing.
The more you live in illusions, the more truth hurts.
Right.
If you don't want to live in illusions, I are very clear, that's not a problem.
Well, it's interesting. When I first had to really face the mortgage fraud, I couldn't believe that the mortgage fraud was that bad, and I, as Assistant Secretary of Housing, didn't know. Mm-hmm. And you have to look in the mirror and you have to say, I'm the patsy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a saying, if you're in a game after 20 minutes, you don't know who the patsy is, you're the patsy. And I think it's very hard for most people to face they've been a patsy.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Once one has broken that, that's different. But many people have a difficulty to admit it.
Well, there's a famous story when I was, after 9/11, I was at...
Am I clear enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It was right after 9/11. I was in the prayer service at my church, and my pastor walked up to the podium and he said, George W. Bush was anointed by God for a time such as this. And Thomas,
what
I put my
say?
Hand.
George
W. Yeah. Bush was anointed by God for a time such as this. This is Wednesday, the evening prayer service after Tuesday on 9/11. Mm-hmm. So I put my head in my hands and I started praying and I said, Lord, I need divine intervention, because I knew my whole family was just getting marched to the slaughter. Everybody, my neighbors, everybody's getting marched to the slaughter. So I started praying, asking for divine intervention. And all of a sudden the preacher, which is very unusual in a Southern Baptist convention church, said to me, Austin, you worked in Washington. What do you think? That is divine intervention. So I took a deep breath and I said, well, in my experience, the Bush family is anointed by financial fraud, narcotics trafficking, and pedophilia.
Whoa.
I know.
There it is.
And he gasped and he said, if that's the truth, we're lost. And I said, don't be ridiculous. We have a governor. His name is God. People like the Bushes come and go. And one of my neighbors, a big Democrat, said, yeah.
Very good.
And it broke the trance because, you know, the scripture, where two or more gathered in my name, there am I.
Yeah.
It broke the trance.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, we have to, whether it's giving up, you know, facing the fact that we're a patsy, we're understanding that our governance structure, if we have a spiritual governance structure, we don't need the material
governance
structure.
That's why it's so important to have spiritual thoughts. And I mean, there is a little book, by the way, one of my favorites by Steiner. It's called Spiritual Guidance of Man and Mankind. And there you find a lot about, for example, how angels influenced us in Egypt, how backwards angels today work. Where do they lurk? They work in the lodges, for example.
Yeah.
That's why many of these lodgings have these Egypt alaf, you know?
Uh-huh.
So there is spiritual guidance.
Yeah.
So if we get to that point, we can rise a little bit about thinking it's all dependent on those people who do evil, but they are not servants of evil. They are just allowed in order that we have a chance to see a little bit the reality.
So in closing, Thomas, what should we read? If I want to read more on Steiner to help me build spiritual tools, what would you recommend? We talked about the mystery of Golgotha. We talked about the fifth discipline. There's so much.
Theosophy is one of the basic books about the sevenfold human nature. The Fundamentals of Social Order, about the money. Fifth Gospel. But I think also, for example, what we brought out, the most important book, you have started with Perseus, so maybe we could end making a little note on Perseus. The most important book we ever published was these documents, Correspondence Steiner-Moltke. Because Moltke speaks about reincarnation.
Yeah.
He is coming back right now. He speaks about his task in the East. So you have a Middle European soul of a great significance, which looks at his deeds in the East, which will be spiritually bringing light. Because the Slavic wound is even greater than the American wound.
I think. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It needs healing. It needs treatment.
Right.
So this is a publication which leads the spiritual perspectives into our time, Moltke. But a problem is, of course, if people hear the name Moltke, they think of a general that it's all over. So, but of course, with Steiner, we have so many things, and everyone has to find his own way.
Dip in and find his own way.
But basic, maybe I can close with that. I think with Steiner, it's important to get at the bottom of a few of his written works. The lectures, and there are thousands of lectures.
Right.
They are like footnotes to the basic works.
Right.
Theosophy, occult science, philosophy of spiritual activity, or I think today it's called intuitive knowledge or something. How to get knowledge of higher worlds.
Right.
I think if one does one of these books thoroughly, one will be led on.
Yeah. The Ann Watson is recording lectures for us. She she did the agriculture. But when we published the agriculture, we put up a link to some of the websites that have a lot of these recorded on audio. Okay. So it's a rich library, and she's doing more now.
Very good.
So we'll have. Well, Thomas, this has always been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for me. Thank you very much.
So, you know, I've always had...
See you next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always had Percival by Wagner on my bucket list to
really?
See. Really? I've seen the video and I've listened to it, but I've never seen it in person. But after listening to you talk about it, it's definitely... I will find it.
You have to see it. Maybe next year, but bring it again in Sofia.
In Bulgaria.
Yeah, most great. The Slavic people have an understanding of Wagner's Parsifal that I have not found here.
Wow. Wow, why is that?
I think because they could link to this tremendous suffering of the central figure, Amfortas, and the success of Parsifal to overcome evil and to find a kind of a solution. That was for me the impression. They could identify immensely.
One more thing you have to tell everyone who Percival is.
Percival? Well, the main hero in the Grail story.
Yeah?
Who goes to the Grail castle, who sees the suffering of Amfortas, and who is too dumb to ask a question first, and then he is thrown out again. That's what happens to us. We don't wake up. We see evil and we don't ask the question. And then later he comes back and then he asks, why does he suffer? He sees the suffering and fought us. And that's the beginning of his understanding, as the formula in Wagner is knowledgeable by compassion.
Yeah.
He gets a knower by compassion. And that's the process we all go through, I think.
So he doesn't give up and he does overcome evil.
And even Kundry, who is the instrument of Klingsor, becomes a servant of the Grail at the end. That's Wagner's vision. And that it was wonderful to see in the East, in Sofia, it was the first ever done performance. The audience, the musicians, everyone was really taken in. You could see that.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, Europe for me is always a musical experience. That is fantastic.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thomas, thank you. And we would talk next year.
We will talk next year.